Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode 3 of the UI Breakfast Podcast. And today we are starting a brand new season, which will be 6 episodes with an amazing new co-host whose name is Kai Davis. And he's a spectacular outreach consultant. And today we're going to talk everything about his life, his work, and how he actually got to the place where he is now. So, hi, Kai.
Hey there, Jane. Thank you so much for having me on.
My pleasure. So, before I ask you all these questions about your life, I would just love to say that I'm very happy you're here. And this format of having someone who you trust for like a few episodes in a row might be a very interesting one. What do you think?
I love the idea of a format. I think it takes the idea of running a season of a podcast, 12, say, set-aside episodes on a single topic, and reduces it down to scope, brings in a special co-host. I think it adds an interesting flavor to the whole element of podcasting.
Yeah, we're going to give it a try, and maybe we just come back for another 6 episodes or something. We'll see.
Exactly.
All right. So, Kai, I was looking for your bio and didn't find it anywhere. Where can people find about you online?
The best place for people to read more about me is at my primary website, doubleyouraudience.com. And I have my bio tucked away on my about page and my press page there. But the short of it is I'm an outreach consultant, which means I work with consultants or product creators or single founders and help them promote their best content and promote their products by finding existing audiences online and building a relationship on my client's behalf, basically acting as that business development or public relations consultant type person and saying, hey, you've got a wonderful site and a great audience over here. We've got an awesome product. We'd love to work together. Let's brainstorm. How can we do that? How can we make that happen? And the end result is my client gets exposure to a new audience. It's almost like I'm setting them up to present to an audience of 100 or 500 or 1,000 new people every week. And the audience we're talking to gets to learn something new, gets exposed to a new product or a new method of thought, and is able to come over and join my client's audience.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. Usually, like an old school outreach is limited to, let's say, guest posting, but actually there is a whole universe to that. And it was one of the big openings for me that, you know, the chances don't occur by themselves and really not really would a famous person reach out to you and say, would you like to appear in my podcast? But for example, it's a reverse process and you're teaching consultants to do just that.
Exactly. Yeah, I think there's such a limiting belief in the mind of consultants or entrepreneurs or business owners that we should wait until we're tapped or selected to participate in something or present in something. But the truth is, it takes us saying, hey, you know what? I'm going to go after this opportunity. I'm going to go pitch them. I'm going to be relentless and politely persistent until they either say no. Under no circumstances will we work with you. Or they say, okay, yeah, you know, you've been emailing us for a few weeks. Let's get on a phone and see what we could do together. So I think when you approach it strategically and intentionally, you get what you want. If you wait for somebody to hand it to you, you're going to be waiting for a long time.
That's right. And when I was a small girl, my mom would say something like, but what's the worst thing that's going to happen? They're not going to punch you in the forehead for anything, you know? Mm-hmm. But amazing opportunities might happen.
I have the exact same, slightly less violent, but the exact same conversation and metaphor with my clients. So often I'm saying like, okay, yeah, like we're going to email them every 3 days and just be it email marketing or be it outreach and, you know, present them with something educational, provide them with value. And they're like, oh no, that we're emailing them too much. And I'm like, well, how many emails have you received today? And they're like, let me check my inbox, 150. I'm like, okay, how many emails do you think the person we're emailing has received today? Maybe 100. So what does it matter if we send them one email every day? It's one out of 150. Like, we increase our chances of getting noticed. We increase our chances of getting a response if we continue contacting them, or they say no and we just back away. But if we give up and don't send those emails or don't start that outreach process, we're giving up before we've even started.
That's right. But it is not a conventional, you know, piece of wisdom to do outreach yourself. So, maybe you tell us about your life story and how you actually got to the place where you have that wisdom and share it with consultants. Maybe let's start with some early days, maybe high school or even earlier. Would you like to share that?
Definitely. So I've always been interested in entrepreneurship. There's a funny story that my friend Philip Morgan teased out of me on an episode of his podcast, the Consulting Pipeline podcast. When I was, I think, 11 years old, my parents had bought me this big toy for the holiday season. And I think it was like a Power Rangers Megazord Transformer. And so I get it. I'm super excited. I open it up. I unwrap the gift, and the box is sitting there, and I put it on my dresser. And my mom walks by my room a couple days later, and she's like, "Why haven't you opened your toy yet, Kai?" And I say, "Oh, I'm saving it. I'm keeping it mint in box." And she's like, "What the hell did you just say to me? What? I bought it for you to play with." And so I'd always been interested in collectibles and in business and in understanding like where value was. And that came into play later in my life when I started an eBay business in high school and college, an eBay business buying and selling collectible cards, Magic the Gathering. I ran feel free to interrupt me, whatever going on. But I had started that and always been interested in entrepreneurship, ran that for a few years. And around the time I graduated college, I stopped pursuing that eBay business, but I landed my first job working as the sales manager for an educational and tech company in Eugene, which was an interesting fit because my background was in economics, entrepreneurship, and marketing. And I really hadn't ever done a sales position before, but they were like, "We think you have the hustle. We were looking for somebody with new ideas. You've got a lot of new ideas. Let's put you in this position and see what happens." So I started out my day job career really working in a sales focused position, building up their sales team, building up their sales strategy from the ground up. And I was at that company for about 2 years and eventually left because I wanted to transition to the director of marketing role. They wanted to hire from outside of the company. It just wasn't a fit. But I switched over to another company in Eugene where I was a marketing manager and got to hone my teeth on a lot of digital marketing campaigns, search engine optimization, blogger management, editorial content for our blog. And that got me more adept and familiar with internet marketing strategies, email marketing strategies. From there, I was recruited away actually to a construction company, which wasn't the best fit, but just in terms of culture. And I spent my time there managing our proposal process. So large construction company, we're working on multi-million dollar projects. I'm the guy who's writing the 40-page RFPs in InDesign, staying up till midnight cranking them out. I learned InDesign very, very well. And I'm happy that I never have to use InDesign ever, ever again. A friend of mine called it infuriating design software, InDesign. So
right.
When I look at my history, I'm like, okay, I could see a couple touch points here where I was working in sales, I was working in marketing, I was working in proposals, and all of those led me to quitting my day job, deciding to focus on freelancing and saying, I've worked on these different areas. Okay, let me pull it together and see how these relate to running a business. And as I worked as a consultant, first I started out just doing front-end WordPress development because that's what I was good at. That's what I knew how to do from playing around on WordPress with my friends. From there, I said, well, what's a more valuable problem for me to solve? And I had moved forward to search engine optimization. Search engine optimization led me to realizing, well, the real problem here is my clients need more links. Link building is kind of boring and spammy. What's a better way to approach it? And I realized if I married a sales outreach strategy with a public relations strategy, I'd be able to focus on building relationships with influencers on behalf of my clients. And through those relationships, naturally get links. Instead of going out there and saying, hello, you have a beautiful website, we'd love it if you'd link to us. Nobody responsible to those emails. I'd be able to say, hey, you have a great audience. You're sharing wonderful content with your audience. We'd love to help you create something awesome and spectacular for your audience. What can we do? And so it really put the ball in their hands. So they were able to say, oh man, like you guys are making this really cool product. What if we did a review where I use your product in this type of project and we could do it this way? And it turned into us brainstorming the authority or the influencer and myself brainstorming different ways we could create something cool. And the side effect of which is we got that link I was chasing anyways. We got traffic to our site. We got a third-party testimonial or endorsement pointing to our site. And so it was all the benefits I was searching for in search engine optimization and link building, but without needing to say, hello, sir, would you please link to us? So it ended up being more and more of a focus. And eventually clients started reaching out to me saying, we want to hire you for that outreach thing you do. The SEO thing, yeah, sure. Tell us if we're getting more traffic, of course. Tell us if we get more links, of course. But you're doing the outreach thing really well. We want to hire you just for that. And I realized I had inadvertently found myself in a position doing something I loved that my clients really wanted to hire me for, that solved an expensive problem for them that they were willing to pay well for. And I was like, oh my God, I literally lucked out finding this little niche for myself.
That's great. So let's see, how many years of sales and then marketing did it take you to finally, you know, graduate that that expertise that you are doing now?
It's hard to say. I mean, like, we could give two answers here. One answer is I've always been interested in sales and marketing, and I've been reading books by David Ogilvy and different direct marketing specialists since I was 15 or 16 years old, because it just always was interesting for me to learn about how to sell and how people are marketing. But the flip side of the answer is, well, how long have I been like intentionally studying this to get better at this aspect of my job? It really was me learning on the fly as I identified a problem and said, well, I don't need to be the expert to solve this problem. Let's say the problem is getting a client more links. I don't need to be the definitive expert on getting links. I just need to know 10 to 20% more than I do right now. So if I read two or so books and read a couple articles, maybe watch a YouTube video, I'll know enough to get started. And once I get started, I'll learn where the holes are in my knowledge. So it's a combination of I've always been interested in these topics and had been reading them casually throughout my life. But the intentional study only started when I had clients who were saying, this is the type of problem we need some help solving. Can you help us solve it? And so for consultants listening, one major takeaway that I've had going through this process is, as I've changed trajectories, as I've changed focuses, I don't need to say, okay, I hit the reset button, time to go off to the lab and study for 5 years. It's okay, I could leverage the knowledge I already have. I'm going to do a test project for a client, maybe for free, maybe for a reduced rate, just to figure out how well I know what I think I know. And from that, figure out, okay, I've got a good understanding of 60% of this, but I need to better understand, say, how to write an email that people respond to, or how to manage a project with a blogger so the blogger is interested in actually completing it. So it really has been a process of learning on my feet over the last year and a half or 2 years, and selectively studying as I encounter an area where I'm like, oh, I don't quite understand the best way to approach this, but understanding it won't take that much of investment. Maybe it'll just be a book or two.
Right. So I think the important qualities here would be, you know, your energy and your courage to try these new fields without putting yourself in a shameful position. Mm-hmm. And, you know, lowering that bar for quality to get started, let's say from 100% to 60%, it's really great. And it is a helpful tip for anybody who is, you know, applying for a job or looking for a new client.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The biggest mind shift personally in the last 6 months has been, let me tell you the way I used to think and how I'm thinking now. So I always used to think, when it comes to a product like an ebook or a course, when it comes to a consulting service, it's like a binary relationship. Either it's absolutely amazing and the client loves it and just wants to throw money at you, or it's terrible and they hate it and they're going to ask for their money back. I was stuck in this mindset of there's only these two possibilities. And in a conversation with my friend Pat from Ruby Steps, we realized collectively that it's actually more of a gradient. It's a spectrum that at the top end, you have a service or a product, or let's just call it a thing. You have a thing and somebody buys the thing and they're like, oh my God, this is amazing. It cost me $100. I'm getting 10 times the value back. Or it's a service and I got 10 times the value back. In the middle, slightly down from there, it's okay, I paid money for this. I'm very satisfied with the result. I'll leave a good testimonial. This was worth my time and money. And then down below that, you have the spectrum of, you know, this wasn't the value I expected. It wasn't as good as I thought it would be. I would either like more value added to this, so I feel compensated for my investment, or I'd like a refund. And when I started looking at consulting and information products and courses that way, it really unlocked a lot of doors for me, because I realized if I add a new consulting service, I don't need to be the best out there. Or if I'm fulfilling a consulting project, I don't need it to be 100% perfect. To the client, there's that complete spectrum where 70% perfect in my book might be 100% perfect or beyond in their book, because we have a different way of looking at things. Similarly, with a product, I might write an ebook and be like, ah, oh, this is version one. There's so many issues. Oh God, I hope they don't complain. But the reader's like, oh my God, you taught me everything I need to know. How are you only charging $49 for this? So by realizing that there's this spectrum and what I'm providing can exist throughout the spectrum, there's an opportunity for me to add new services and not feel confined to my limiting beliefs. Am I explaining that well?
Yes. And, you know, okay, we'll take that out. Just wait.
You're asking drilling questions.
Right. And, you know, we naturally go through the stages or through all these stages when we grow as a professional, we just don't realize it. We think we're trying to be 100% perfect while we're just, you know, growing it. And then you look back at your own work and you say, oh my God, how could that ever be paid for? But in fact, it's just a natural process. And if you got your match for the right client at that very right moment, that means everything is all right. Mm-hmm. And it's a learning process.
100%, 100%. And you're right. It's an interesting exercise to look back at your past work and say, well, obviously the work I was doing 2 or 3 years ago probably isn't as good as the work I'm doing today, but people were happy to pay for it. So that obviously means there's a spectrum in terms of the quality I could deliver. Not you could deliver crappy work to the client, but it doesn't have to be 100% 5 gold stars in your mind for the client to be satisfied and feel they got value out of the project.
That's right. So back to your education, what kind of college did you go for?
I went to the University of Oregon and started out in the business program. As you can tell, I love business desperately, but I hated the business program, not through any fault of their own, just because I was more interested in entrepreneurship, in building my own business, in learning how to take an idea, test an idea, see if the market wants to buy that idea. And with the few entrepreneurship programs I took through the University of Oregon, I was left feeling a little disappointed in them. So I decided to back away from a business degree. And instead, I got a degree in economics, which was really, really interesting for me just as a subject. But it isn't something I practice or study or use day to day. I just picked that because I wanted to set myself up for a future master's in business. And I figured, hey, an econ degree would be a nice springboard there. But the real value I got of college was actually two things. I took a number of creative writing classes, and just taking those classes really helped me hone my voice and ability as a writer. I'm still developing those skills as I practice, but it gave me some basic tools to start moving forward with. The second big takeaway was I had a lot of free time my senior year, and so I was able to launch a few side businesses with a couple friends. One of them was our first take at a marketing agency. The other was every other week comic newspaper we started and published on campus that ended up with 17 students working on it. So,
speaking of management, right?
I know, right? But it gave me this ability to learn and practice business outside of the classroom setting. And that year was probably the most valuable year in terms of my business education, just because I was able to start a business and grow a business and be like, oh my God, I have a thing. This is scary. What do I do now? And realize that that's a challenge that a lot of entrepreneurs face. And I faced multiple times in my career as an entrepreneur, but that was really the most valuable business part of college for me. Making the space and time to practice different business skills.
That sounds great. So besides these two takeaways, which are clearly life-related and business-related, but not precisely, you know, knowledge-related, is there any practical knowledge you still apply in your daily, you know, consulting practice? Or do you just scratch everything and everything you use now is a completely different story because it's real life?
That's a good question. I think that I've started to look at college as being a great opportunity to learn. I use the phrase meta skills a lot, to learn like the meta skill of how to learn something. And it's
yes.
Not that I'm not applying my econ degree. It's that getting my econ degree taught me how to learn new things. And that's the skill I use most often.
Right. We talked with Christoph Engelhardt during MicroConf about college degrees in Europe and in Russia. And my opinion is that if you have a college degree, that at least proves that you're able to write your term paper and stand up and, you know, talk in front of a lot of smart people for half an hour. And that's already going to be a great achievement. And all the other perks that you mentioned, they come as a bonus.
Yep.
Even though it's so remote from real life, unfortunately.
Oh, unfortunately. It is night and day. And I think for some people, you can make the college experience more like a real life experience. And I always have that nagging thought in the back of my mind. Well, what if I didn't go to college? What if I had taken those 4 years and practiced building something myself? But whenever I ask myself that, I am happy that I took the time to get my degree because it was a fulfilling experience and it taught me these meta skills and it let me connect with people who are friends and colleagues now.
Right, right. So now that we went over your college years and that experience when you found out that you're actually an outreach consultant. So starting from there, was that a couple years ago as of today?
I transitioned over to, it's sort of like a sliding scale. It's a bit muddy. It was me realizing that there's these problems out there and adjusting the services I'm providing to solve the problems and then sort of playing catch up with my branding and positioning to better reflect what I actually was doing. So about a year and a half ago, I was identifying as an SEO e-commerce consultant for Shopify stores. If you have a Shopify store, I'll help you with SEO.
That's very nice. That's very nice and niche.
It was very nice. It was very niche. It just ended up being an audience that I didn't work that well with. I was targeting smaller initial starting out stores, but then I realized, hey, they have tiny margins. They can't really afford $2,000 or $3,000 or $4,000 a month. This might not be the best fit. So I transitioned over to people with higher margins, people selling products and courses online. And it was right around that time when I was pitching myself as an SEO consultant, I was always met with their expectations of what that meant. So I'd say, hey, I'm Kai Davis. I'm an SEO consultant. And they'd say, oh, SEO consultants. I hate SEO consultants. They're snake oil salesmen. And I was like, oh, great. This is going to be a very hard sell. And I realized on the advice of a mutual friend of ours, Jonathan Stark, what I needed to do was pick a term to define the service I was providing or the skill I was providing that people weren't immediately familiar with. If you say SEO consultant, you think $500 a month, number one ranking on Google. He said, pick something new and unique. And he shared a wonderful, wonderful story with me that stuck with me. The idea of if you're an attorney or a lawyer and you introduce yourself at a party and you're like, and somebody says, what do you do? And you say, oh, I'm a lawyer. They immediately think they know what you do. But if you say something they're not familiar with, like, oh, I'm a dog lawyer. People are like, what? A dog lawyer? Tell me more. And so based on that story, I said, well, great. I'm going to call myself an outreach consultant because nobody really knows what that means. And I'm able to control what that branding is, what that framing is, and it naturally leads to people saying, you're an outreach consultant. I've never heard of that thing before. What is it? Tell me more. And then I'm able to lead into a pitch on like, well, here's the benefits of outreach. We're going to build your audience. We're going to build relationships with influencers. We're going to help you sell more products. Would that be a benefit for your business?
That's very interesting because there are a few opinions that kind of contradict here. First is, as you mentioned, call yourself something that people know. Mm-hmm. Which, of course, kind of compromises your expertise because it positions you as a commodity more than really. The other one, the other opinion is that you shouldn't really make people reinvent the wheel because what you do should be obvious from the name. So it should be kind of in plain English still. And I think the term outreach consultant pretty much, you know, combines both. And I'm really glad you nailed that. Was that your first idea or how do you come up with it?
I spent 3 months in soul torturing agony trying to figure this
out. All right. So that was a very good question.
No exaggeration. I mean, like we're in a Slack mastermind together. I'm in a couple other Slack channels and you could ask anybody in that channel, what was Kai doing from January through March? And they would all answer, he was continually beating himself up about how to position himself and how to identify in his business. And it took 3 months of just being like, What do I say? What do I do? Does this make sense? What audience do I want to pitch to come along to the idea of, okay, this feels like the right audience. This feels like the right way to position myself. I'm going to take it and run with it. And one big realization from that was your positioning, your identification as a consultant or a business owner, it's fluid. It's not like you're getting married and there's no take-backsies. It's something where you're able to change and evolve and grow with it over time. You can pick something and be like I did. I was the SEO guy for Shopify stores. And I was able to say, hey, you know what? That's not working for me anymore. I'm going to move forward and pick something else that makes more sense for how I want to position my business.
So I know, Kai, that at some point of your career, you took a 30 by 500 class by Amy Hoy. And I'm quite sure that had an influence on your consulting positioning. But at what stage was it? Was it before or afterwards? Or did that help you in safaring for that audience?
Absolutely. I took 30 by 500 just about 2 years ago now. And it was incredibly valuable for me in understanding the pains and problems of the audience that I wanted to serve, I wanted to create products for, I wanted to give services to. The idea behind 30 by 500 is it's a very research-focused program where instead of starting out saying, I'm going to build a thing, let me build a thing and see if people want it, you start off by saying, this is the audience I want to serve. Let's say it's SEO consultants. You go out there and you study them in the wild. What are the pains they're talking about? What are the problems they're talking about? What are the tools they're using that they're complaining about? You get a bunch of these pains gathered up, and then you're able to create educational content that directly addresses the pains they're experiencing. So when I started off with SEO, I used the methodology that Amy Hoy teaches in 30 by 500 and said, okay, great. What are the problems that SEO consultants are experiencing? And from that, I was able to find some ideas. How do we build links? Is link building still safe? Are we supposed to do SEO? What's relevant? What tools am I supposed to use? And create content that educated my audience and started bringing people to me. And each time as I transitioned to a different audience focus or focusing on a different expensive problem, moving to Shopify, moving to outreach consulting, working with info product creators, I was able to apply that same methodology. Go out into the wild, discover what problems they're actually experiencing, create articles that answer those problems, and use that educational content marketing as a way to demonstrate my expertise, demonstrate my knowledge, and validate that I'm somebody who knows what I'm talking about. I could point to one article in particular on my site. I'd written this long article, how do I get more traffic? Because it's a question I saw repeated time and time again across every forum I was taking a look at. And so I said, okay, great. I'm going to take this question, how do I get more traffic, and break down the steps I'd use for a client, the high-level strategy, the low-level tactics, and just explain, this is what I think makes sense. This is how I do it. That article alone has put something like $20,000 in my pocket because it attracted two retainer clients with me on a recurring billing who are still with me, and attracted two or three one-off projects that were around $1,500 a piece. So just by creating that educational content that solved a pain, solved a problem that my audience was experiencing, and putting it out there, it validated I knew what I was talking about. It became a place that people could link to, where people could read, and it helped me put a flag in the sand and say, if you're experiencing this problem, how do I get more traffic to my website? How do I get more traffic to my product? This is the system I recommend using. If you'd like to learn more, send me an email and we could see if I'm a fit for working with you. And it worked.
And I'm also happy to notice that you tapped into one of the biggest pains that anybody who's doing business online faces. Like for a SaaS, the main thing would be getting more traffic and getting sales. And for consultants, it would also be getting traffic. And it's virtually the core of any business online is first you get traffic and then you do something with it and you apply conversion, et cetera, et cetera. So
Absolutely. This
is like a bread. This is like bread butter of the online business world is getting traffic. So it's never, it never hurts to get more traffic, which you do.
Absolutely. I 100% agree. And in a roundabout sense, it sort of bit me in the tuchus picking such a broad problem because like you said, it applies to consultants. It applies to product creators. It applies to SaaS owners or SaaS developers. It applies to anybody with an online business. And so over the past few months, I've been asking myself that question of, okay, I've discovered a painful problem here that could be solved in 1,000 different ways with 1,000 different solutions. But which audience does it make the most sense for? Do I target this? I really am big on the idea of a website should be targeted to a single audience and ideally solving a single problem. So I've got the problem nailed down. How do I get more traffic? But is the right audience for this consultants who are looking to get more leads and more traffic to their website? Is it product creators who are saying, well, I've got a product or two products built up. I want to get more traffic so I make more sales. Is it SaaS owners who are saying, we've got the system set up, we've got a conversion funnel, we've got an email course, we want to feed traffic in the front end? I'm not sure on that. And it's something I'm continually exploring. I have some clients who are in each niche right now. And I guess it's a privilege and a perk to be able to say, well, I've got clients in each one. So I get to figure out which one works best. But I think I'll have more success with it as a focus once I pick a single audience and double down hard on just that audience and say, you know what? The solution might work for consultants and might work for SaaS owners, but I'm choosing to focus just on people who are creating educational products like an ebook or a course.
That's right. So we should totally discuss the problem of, you know, finding the audience, finding your niche, and we will do that in the next episode. Mm-hmm. But now let's give our listeners an overview of those stellar year and a half that followed after you nailed down your niche as an outreach consultant. So what projects did you get involved into? What was your online life like? And how has it been going for the last few months?
It's been going really, really well. I found that once you as a consultant pick a position, pick an expensive problem and pick a niche, it becomes easier for people to refer projects to you and easier for you to refer away work that's not a good fit. So once I defined myself as an outreach consultant and I help people get more traffic, I help them manage their most valuable relationships, I do the outreach part of their business for them, the outreach marketing, people were like, oh, I need somebody to do outbound marketing for me. Oh, Kai's the guy to do that for me. Great, I'll hire Kai. And so it's let people easily communicate what I do, refer people to me, and it's worked out great. The initial projects I worked on were more focused on the e-commerce side of things, and gradually I phased that out as I discontinued the traffic for those pipelines and focused more on product creators or product owners. And typically a project is me helping the client promote their existing content. So I think of it being the other side of the coin to content marketing. Content marketing would be actually producing the podcast or writing an article. Content promotion or outreach marketing like I do is saying, well, we want to go on somebody else's podcast as a guest, or we want to get this authority on our podcast as a guest, or we want to land a guest article on this large site over here. I come in to manage those relationships, start those conversations, set it up for my clients so they're able to say, okay, great, we've got a guest post going live on Skill Crush in 4 weeks. This is the topic. This is the deadline for the draft. Great, I'm able to start writing. Check in with me in 2 weeks to make sure it's moving forward. And it works well for my clients because they don't have to think about managing these relationships or managing their calendar. They know that I'm on top of it. I've got everything laid out for them. They just have to show up and do what they do great, which is talk about their area of expertise.
That's great. So you eliminate all that, you know, footwork from their life and provide links instead and traffic.
Exactly. Exactly. The benefit is it solves a huge pain point that a number of my clients experience. And that pain point I'm discovering more and more is I don't have the time to do this because my business has hit this level of success. I used to be able to do it, but now my time is better invested either focusing on growing my business or spending time with my family or with my hobbies. I need to delegate this to somebody I could trust, which is wonderful since I'm so happy to come in as that trusted person and provide that solution. The not really a downside, but let's call it a downside just for this example is it's much more of a qualitative result. I'm not coming in and saying, hi, I'm Kai, the A/B testing guy. I'm going to help you increase your revenue by 20% over the next 2 months. We definitely do see dramatic increases in traffic. With two of my clients over the first 3 months of our engagement, we tripled their overall traffic while keeping the conversion rate at the same percentage. So it ended up tripling their conversions. But the work I do isn't as directly related to end of day revenue as I would like it to be. So it's not as quantitative. It's more qualitative and squishy in a sense. We're talking about conversations we're having, placements we're getting. Yes, links we're earning, and yes, increases in traffic, but it still is more on the qualitative side than the quantitative side, which I disclose to clients and I say, you know what? Each business is different. This is a public relations exercise. This is us going out there and building these relationships to see what happens. I can't guarantee the future. All I could do is point to the previous clients I've worked with and say, if we do everything right, maybe we'll get similar results. And I've been lucky that the systems and methodologies I advocate have helped my clients get similar results time and time again. but it is a bit more qualitative than quantitative. And that's something I'd love to either find a solution for or just throw my hands up and say, hey, it's more qualitative than not.
Well, as a designer, I totally second that because design is surely not quantitative by no means. And even if you do like a drastic redesign, you still cannot measure precisely what are the effects of that, because there is always, you know, the splash of traffic that's related to publicity, and it's always not, it's just not measurable at all. So yours is probably kind of in the same area, even though you have a more, more access to metrics, I would say. Have you?
Definitely. So tell me, like, when you're in that initial conversation with a client and they're saying, well, what type of results can this bring us? How do you deflect their objections or counter their hesitancy about it being more qualitative than quantitative?
I would say I try to construct my relationships with leads and clients in such a way that they already come up to me with such a huge pain that I do not have to justify my involvement at that point, because they just see how much money they're leaving on the table when the users churn because of their poor user experience, for instance, or if they're clearly seeing bad conversion on their site. But you know, just measuring a drop or increase in conversions, it's not something I can do, because there is always copy involved as well. And copy, from my experience, is like 80% and design is just 20, no matter how important 20.
No, I completely agree. Design is, I mean, they're both invaluable, but great. I don't know if this is bad to say about design, but I almost think of it as great copy presented with bad design will still convert. Terrible copy presented with wonderful design, it'll convert, but it won't do as well. But great copy with great design together is like a superhero team up. It's going to be hands and feet above anything else.
Absolutely. You just nailed it with that phrase. That great copy with poor design will convert, and that's the main thing. So you're doing primarily client work these days, but I know you have your hands up for products. And can you give us a hint about that?
Absolutely. So most of my time is spent on client work these days, but I'm working on three products right now. The first is what I'm naming the traffic manual. It's distilling down the lessons and the systems I've used over the last year and a half or 2 years with my clients on outreach marketing campaigns in a do-it-yourself model. So for a client that shows up and says, hey, Kai, I'd love to work together, but you're booked up right now. What's the next best solution? The traffic manual steps a client through the exact systems, the exact scripts, the exact frameworks they need to use to increase their traffic by building relationships with influencers, building relationships with people who have an audience that they are trying to reach. It's in pre-order right now at doubleyouraudience.com/traffic-manual. I'm sure we could toss a link in show notes.
Sure.
It's a really exciting book to be working on. The second project I have my hands in right now is another product focused on cold outreach overall. It's named the Cold Outreach Blueprint, and it's designed to teach people that fundamental skill of sending a cold outreach email, emailing somebody you don't know and trying to pitch them on something. It's a scary thing that a lot of consultants I talk to, a lot of product owners I talk to, just don't have a good handle on. Like, how do I pitch somebody? What am I supposed to say? How do I build a relationship? How do I come off without being salesy or without being over the top? And so this is a product that I'm starting to sketch out and work on to teach people that fundamental skill of sending a cold email or pitching.
That's great. So you mentioned two products and you said that you have three.
Yep. And the third is one that you and I are working on together with a group of friends,
right.
The independent consulting manual.
It's right. Let me give the audience a hint how we actually know each other. Both me and Kai are members of an amazing large mastermind, which has like over 10 members, which is called Productized Consulting Roundtable. And we are just working together on a big collaborative book right now. And everybody's contributing a couple articles. And tell us more about that, Kai.
it's basically condensing the last year. I think we've been in the mastermind for just around a year and a quarter or a year and a half now. Condensing down the different lessons we've had individually and collectively about growing a more sustainable consulting business or attracting better clients into a handbook for people to use as they say, hey, how do I level up my business to the next level? How do I overcome the challenges in front of us? So there's, I think, 10 people contributing articles to it, and everybody's contributing 2 articles about a challenge that they've overcome and how they've overcome it. How do I write better proposals? How do I switch from charging hourly to charging based on value? How do I build an audience? How do I set up a community Slack? How do I set up a productized service? And our intention with it is for it to be a valuable resource for any consultant that's saying, I know there's things I could be doing better. I'm just not 100% sure what they are. This independent consulting manual will give you, the sole business owner, that solo consultant, a framework, a roadmap, and a touchstone to use as you focus on growing your business.
Right. And the Productized Consulting Roundtable is a group of, you know, the most amazing and brightest minds I could ever imagine in the world. So whatever ends up there in that book is going to be pure gold for any consultant out there. It's like tapping into 12 minds. Actually, I'm just having my hands on the cover, and there are 12 people involved, Kai. Did you know?
Oh, perfect. I'm the project manager, and I don't know that. So I'm doing an excellent job of project manager.
No, I just went through that job of putting everybody in alphabetical order for the cover. So I possess the most precise knowledge here.
Oh, perfect. You're on top of it.
Right. So that coming in. And how do you see your future? Let's wrap up the bio thing, but what is your direction you're heading towards?
I want to go 100% products. I think that I've always been interested in teaching and educating people, and I viewed consulting as a way of helping better a client's situation in a one-on-one relationship, teaching them these systems, teaching them these tools, helping them build a better business. But I want to scale that up so it's not just one-on-one relationships. So when I look forward a year or 2 years, it's me growing a library of products that solve the same pains I'm solving as a consultant, just in a do-it-yourself model, and then pairing it with either roundtables or mastermind groups or group mentoring so that people who say, hey, you know what? This is valuable. I see this is the solution I need, but I need a little more hands-on experience. I'm able to work with them either in a one-on-one coaching situation or in a group mentoring situation to help them get to the next level in their business. But I'm really interested in, we could think of it as higher leverage products. So when you're a consultant, you do a one-on-one relationship and you get paid a great hourly rate if you're doing it well, and then it's done. With products, you might invest a lot of time upfront with the product and you sell $1,000 worth of the book and you're like, oh, great, I made $10 an hour. This sucks. But then you're able to keep on selling that book month after month, year after year, and it keeps making money for you without you really investing more time in creating the product or fulfilling the product, just marketing it and talking about it. Similarly, with mentoring or coaching, they're higher leverage in the sense that you could make a better hourly rate or affect more people positively by working with them in those types of scenarios. So that's really the direction I want to see my business go, launching more products and finding better ways to work with people in group settings.
Absolutely. You know, it's a kind of a drug that you wake up in the morning and you see that, you know, a few sales happened and you were just barely sleeping and the sales did bring you, let's say, 3 times by $59 and you just did nothing for that. And this is totally such an incentive to keep up working for products, even though in the beginning stage, you're totally right. The return on investment is just miserable sometimes. However, mm-hmm. The perspective is just glorious.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think it's wonderful because you don't need to necessarily do more work to help that person, build a better business. They're able to buy the book. They're able to read the book. They're able to implement the book and they get positive outcomes from that without having to need a one-on-one relationship with you, like working with a client. So it's really attractive to me from that sense. And it's also really attractive to me from the sense of, well, I want to be able to create interesting things. I have a framed print hanging up on my wall. It's a quote I love. It says, all I want to be is someone that makes new things and thinks about them. And I've had that print for something like 6 years now. And I constantly come back to it as that's the mantra I want to follow in my business, in my life. I want to be somebody who creates new things, thinks about them, and releases them to the public, releases them to people, says, this is something that will help you build a better business, attract more clients, get more traffic, be happier with your business. And the best way to do that is creating these products that touch on people and help them get to the next level. And I look to programs like 30 by 500 or groups like the Mastermind we share as being instrumental in helping me get over my roadblocks and my hesitations in launching these things and actually shipping these things.
That's right. It's a very honorable goal. However, we've all known you for another quote that's always hanging behind your... Please tell us.
I have another print hanging in my office, and it's a quote by the designer and business owner and speaker, Mike Montero. I'm butchering his last name, I'm sure. I believe he's Mike Montero, and he used to be Mike FTW on Twitter. It says, "Fuck you, pay me." And it is a quote that I live by in all of my client work and in all of my client relationships. I love my clients desperately. I love them dearly. They're friends, they're collaborators, they're colleagues, but they better fucking pay me. And if they don't, we are not going to work together.
Right. So you have that angel side and the devil side both inside your wonderful, brilliant consulting head.
But, and yeah, the fuck you, pay me idea is, I think, essential for any consultant. Like, when you adopt that mindset, when a client says, "Hey, I'd love it if you just, like, can you make a small tweak to this design? It shouldn't take you more than a couple minutes." Well, fuck you. Pay me to do the work. Here's an invoice for $50. That's how much it'll cost to make the change. And often I found when a client comes back and is like, "Oh, you know, I know this isn't in scope, but, you know, could you just do this one tiny little thing for me?" There's two paths you could take there as a consultant. You could either say, "Of course, I'd love to. Let me make that change." And when you do that, it's great. You're helping somebody out. But I found it often dilutes the boundaries of that client relationship, where the client now feels like, "Oh, if there's a small change, I could go to the consultant and they're always happy to make it. Great." But when you push back and say, "You know what? I'd love to make that change. It's out of scope of this project. Here's an invoice for $50. Once you pay, I'll get it done within 48 hours. Now the client has to make a decision. Is this tiny little change worth $50 to them? If it is, they'll pay, and hey, you got paid. Wonderful. If it's not, you no longer have to do the work, and you were able to shut them off and turn down that request in a very polite way that says, my time is valuable. You've already acknowledged my time is valuable by hiring me for this project. We're going to continue acknowledging my time is valuable by paying me for this additional work. It's your choice. You could either buy this or you could not buy this. And I, as the consultant, don't care which way you go."
That's right. So at this positive note, we're going to end off our first episode together. And Kai, can you please drop us two short links? Like, what are the URLs people can find you at?
Of course. The best spot to find me online, my main website, is doubleyouraudience.com. But I've put together a few special gifts for the listeners of this podcast. If you go to...
Oh, amazing.
glad to. If you go to doubleyouraudience.com/UI, you'll get a nice little landing page that tells you about the special bonuses, a couple interviews I've done, and a couple worksheets for you. You can just drop your email in and you get those free, completely gratis, no charge whatsoever, to help you build a more stable consulting business and get to that next level.
Yeah, right. This is an outreach consultant here in action, you know, practicing his witchcraft right here. And, you know, you will not regret if you go there and sign up. Seriously. All right, Kai. Thank you for coming today, and talk to you in the next episode.
Talk to you soon, my friend.
All right. Bye-bye.